What's up, AUDL fans? Welcome back to Stall 7, first episode of 2021. So I guess Happy New Year. I know we're a little late at this point. I am Chris McGlynn, joined as always by Alex Rubin. Alex, how are you? Welcome to 2021. Maybe we're going to get some Ultimate this year.
I sure hope so, because so far it already has not been the best year.
No, it's only 12 days old as we're recording this, and there's been some less than ideal developments in our country, and we'll see. Hopefully we'll get some improvement as the year rolls on. Definitely some room for some optimism as the potential AUDL season draws a bit closer. Talks of vaccine being more widely distributed is on the horizon as well. Definitely could be a possibility in the near future. So here's hoping to a much better 2021 than we had in 2020. So let's start here with the fact that we're looking at a potential 2021 season. It's on track to happen. Alex, you've been reporting on UltiWorld that it could happen as soon as May, a little bit later than the league typically starts. But I think given the situation surrounding the vaccine and stuff, pretty likely and manageable timeline for the league to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, it would shock me if we do not have any games played at all in 2021. I think the league is pretty set on having a season in some shape or form. I know they'll definitely be a little flexible with the scheduling, right? We've seen in the NBA and NFL and MLB over the summer that, you know, games might be postponed or moved depending on circumstances. You might have some weird doubleheader situations, but the league is pretty committed to getting on the field and having as close to a normal season as possible.
Yeah, I think we should be able to do that. I'm hoping. I think it's going to look a little bit different. There's certainly a lot of things that could be unique to this 2021 AUDL season. I know that you and I were discussing them previously. Like, we're looking at the possibility of maybe players opting out. That's definitely something that we could see. I don't know what the travel situation is going to look like, if maybe the league strategically looks to limit any sort of cross-country travel or to structure things so that way teams play maybe more games in a weekend, so that way there's less overall travel in general. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they structure it. And of course, the unfortunate thing is we're likely looking at no Canadian teams again just because of the international travel policies that have been placed kind of throughout the world at this point. I don't really foresee those being totally lifted and kind of Ultimate teams given passage. You know, I know that they've made exceptions for some other things, other entities and whatnot. I don't think that Ultimate quite rises to that level yet where they're going to get around those international travel restrictions.
Could we see the Toronto Rush relocate to Buffalo or Tampa Bay like the Toronto Raptors and Toronto Blue Jays have done? Highly doubt it.
No, because they're not, like, because as much as like this is a professional league, this is not everybody's full-time job. So
no, of course not.
You can't just put everybody in Buffalo. It'd be kind of fun. It'd be an interesting take on the AUDL solution here. And I would be interested. Hey, Buffalo, one of the original AUDL cities. So,
you know, getting back to the roots, you're right.
Yep. Absolutely.
I will say, you know, instead of saying no Canadian teams, it's very possible we'll see them play a series, just, you know, the Ottawa, Montreal, and Toronto playing against just each other and making some sort of Canadian Cup. Maybe.
So Toronto just beating Ottawa and Montreal, and then Montreal and Ottawa playing seemingly never-ending games that, for some reason, go down to the wire every time.
It could, is a bit of a, not to get too off topic here, but if Montreal and Ottawa combined, could they beat Toronto in a...
Ooh.
Best of 10 series.
Maybe that's a subscriber. Series. Maybe that's a subscriber only segment we do at some point. But
all right, love to deep
dive. We'll kick that idea down the line. I would need a little bit more time to look at that one. Montreal is decent. And Ottawa has some good pieces, but they just never seem to have the depth necessary to beat Toronto. So maybe definitely a possibility. All right.
Actually, on that topic, you know, it's possible, like, depending on health and safety things, that we actually might see some expanded rosters. You know, I know there's some teams that regularly carry 30 players. Obviously, you can only have 20 active on game day. Mm-hmm. But having more players, you know, in your practice meetings, or, you know, like who know your system and who could be ready to play depending on travel and availability and health, you know, that might be something a team's look towards.
I wouldn't shock me at all. I think and we've seen other sports kind of go to this as well, the NFL, the NBA, that you all have had expanded rosters, more opportunities to kind of build it. The MLB did their taxi squads where they had players participating at different locations. So that way, if there was a positive test and you had a couple people who were maybe high risk, close contacts and all that stuff, you didn't have the entire team, like there were players available to call up. So it's certainly a possibility. I think it would actually be a smart thing for the league to do. The league is kind of done that in the past anyway. There's been teams that have built pretty large practice squads, you know, for lack of a better way to really explain it, in the past anyway, you know, independent of obviously having a pandemic to worry about. So we could see some, I guess, increased numbers of teams looking to apply that type of thinking to their roster building this year. Bigger thing here that we wanted to discuss before we get into a whole lot else, definitely is a little bit of older news at this point, but it's been a really long time since we've done a show. The Indianapolis Alley Cats made a lot of waves on Twitter by planning to kind of like defending the idea they were going to, and then eventually canceling a planned 2021 tryout that was supposed to be scheduled, I believe, right around now, right? It was supposed to be in early January.
No, it's scheduled for December 19th, I believe.
Oh, wow. So even further back. Okay. So regardless, the whole thing ended up not happening in the end. And unfortunately, coming out of that was a former Indianapolis Alley Cats player getting on Twitter and really kind of really crossing the line and kind of entering into cyberbullying territory against somebody who spoke out against the Alley Cats plans to hold tryouts and stuff like that. Definitely no.
It wasn't just Alley Cats tryouts. It was also Travis Carpenter, a key member of the Alley Cats, was advertising an indoor like local league for the Indianapolis.
Oh yes,
team.
Yes.
So there was a lot of pushback against just the idea of anybody playing, whether it was a pro team tryout or a recreational league.
Sure.
And yeah, some of the language, you know, I don't know, they there was like an open Facebook group shared where some of the comments were pretty nasty. It was just honestly, it was embarrassing to see, right? For a community, you know, the ultimate community that thinks of itself as different and promotes, you know, like cooperation as like spirit of the game, just to see that kind of language being thrown around is, you know, by anyone is pretty sad. And I you know, the situation seems to have remedied itself a little bit in that the tryouts got canceled. Mm-hmm. Hopefully people start to do the right thing.
Yeah. And that's the thing really was, it was just, I mean, it was a bad look all the way around. It was just completely unnecessary. And that's where you can have a discussion on it if you really like to. I think, you know where Alex and I come down on this issue, but you know, if you're really adamant that you're following the right safety protocols and you want to have a discussion about that, by all means, like go for it. But there, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to go about that. And that the entire way that was handled was wrong. Now, the player in question was a former Alley Cats player, so he's not really subject to the league's disciplinary things, but the league did update its player, you know, code of conduct, which I guess is a positive thing to come out of this. Nice to see that the league recognizes that there was room for some improvements in the language and the, you know, kind of structure of that. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, there wasn't really a whole lot more the league could do, but it did kind of feel like the league maybe didn't do enough either.
Yeah, I'm not. It's a tough spot for the league because they, you know, as much as the player who basically represents them, whether intentionally or not, you know, did some action, they can't control that player in that moment, and they can't punish him if he's not part of the league anymore. I should say also, this wasn't necessarily a punishment, but the Alley Cats did in December hire a new general manager and a new social media manager also. So hopefully, yeah, at least their public facing presence will be a little more palatable to the greater Ultimate community.
Probably a smart move because Indy has been getting dragged and they're just becoming like a punchline in Ultimate Twitter at this point. So, you know, finding somebody maybe who's like got a more professional background in this and an opportunity to really clean up that image and just, I mean, rethinking, I guess, their whole approach to things. Cause this was, I mean, they mishandled a lot this off season. So I think,
and it's really unfortunate. They're coming off one of the best seasons on the right field that they've ever had, right? This should be a time of, you know, growth and celebration for the team. And instead we're, you know, they're getting into fights on Twitter.
Right. And we're not talking about any of that. We're talking about their missteps off the field and on social media and their, you know, just kind of maybe poorly planned tryouts and stuff. Such, yeah, I mean, definitely it was a big distraction throughout the course of the offseason for the team. And I was disappointed with how it was handled for sure. And anyway, it reflects poorly on the AUDL as well, which I think is something that, you know, doesn't take people too long to point out on Ultimate Twitter. So yeah, definitely just all the way around, not a great situation. Thankfully that the tryouts did not get held. You know, and I think we're going to continue to see teams just take the approach of most likely using their 2020 roster that they were planning on having for this past season that never happened, and just rolling that into 2021. Maybe they do some smaller tryouts, but I think at this point it's just, you know, with cases surging across the country and such, it's not safe to really be doing that right now, especially for an AUDL team where you've got players traveling across state borders to be able to make these tryouts and such. I mean, like, it's just not a, you know, in an indoor facility too. There's just no way that I can get behind doing that right now, is the bottom line. So we won't belabor that any longer because that is definitely a little bit of old news, but we just wanted to touch on it because it was kind of one of the bigger talking points of the AUDL offseason. Speaking of big talking points and people we're going to be talking to, Antoine Davis joins the Atlanta Hustle in what was definitely the biggest offseason acquisition by any AUDL franchise this year. Davis, a 2019 AUDL All-Star, moving to Atlanta and joining that team as they get ready to finally join the new Atlantic Division. So Antoine is our guest today. He's going to be coming. We have an interview coming up with him in just a little bit. Some really interesting stuff there. He got stuck in the Philippines for like 3.5 months during the pandemic, talking about how he's been trying to prepare for the season, only having met like a certain portion of his actual teammates for the upcoming year. So really interesting stuff. Definitely a fun look into, as fun as you could possibly get, looking into kind of the COVID impacts on the you know, preparation for the 2021 season, and also talking about some of the you know, diversity issues that are still plaguing Ultimate as well. So some really good stuff coming up with Antoine in just a little bit, but excited to see how he plays in Atlanta. I think this is a good fit for them. You know, he's a pretty good player, and he's going to be a good fit for pretty much any team in the league. Any franchise would be happy to add a player of Antoine Davis's caliber, but I really like how he fits in Atlanta. I think, you know, he said, you know, himself that probably going to be a pretty good fit for him schematically. And I think he could put up some really impressive stats here. It sounds like he's going to be playing some offense and adding a lot more firepower to a group that already has a couple of really proven scorers.
For sure. No, I think you're talking about one of the best isolation cutters in the entire league, joining a Huck Happy wide open offense. It would surprise me a lot if Antoine Davis does not make the next All-Star team. We'll just put it that way.
All right. So now here's the question. Is Antoine Davis maybe a little bit of a dark horse, but is he an MVP candidate in Atlanta?
You have to think so. I mean, he's certainly in the conversation. You know, depends on the AUDL MVP race is a little interesting just because not every player plays every game, and the way that we count stats isn't necessarily indicative of a player's entire contribution. But yeah, I mean, I think he certainly has a chance in that offense. And, you know, certainly I don't know how much the like viewership matters, but moving to an East Coast time slot certainly helps.
Yeah, I think it's a big thing. And yeah, I mean, I know that you're on the West Coast, so you get to, you know, stay up till whatever normal-ish times and watch, you know, those LA and San Jose and San Diego play. But for me, I mean, some of these games are and late, you know, it's late night games and stuff like that. They're not starting until 9 p.m., 10 p.m. on the East Coast. So, you know, it's definitely, I think it would help in terms of some general visibility for him. I also just think the volume is going to be big. When you look at Ben Yacht was the 2019 MVP, and I think we could see Davis play a pretty similar role to Yacht in this Atlanta offense. You know, he's going to get a chance to dominate down the field. And, you know, he's obviously a very skilled thrower as well. So don't rule out the possibility that if teams just start backing him, that he could start racking up some assist numbers, you know, because it bombing some stuff out to find Maddie Smith downfield and stuff like that. You know, he's one of the top goal scorers in AUDL history. Maddie Smith is. So I think he should definitely be in that conversation for AUDL MVP, you know, one of the front runners for the year. Yeah, I still think you're going to have your usual suspects. You know, Ben Yacht's probably going to be in there. Rowan McDonald for sure. You know, maybe you see a player like Sean McDougal or Travis Dunn step up and, you know, generate some buzz there again. But yeah, I think ultimately Antoine Davis on Atlanta is going to be a little bit different than what we saw from him on San Jose. And I'm excited. Yeah, I think like you said, he feels like a lock for the 2021 All-Star game. You know, assuming that all happens according to plan, which is not looking too likely, but maybe they'll still do the nominations similar to what the NFL is doing this year with the Pro Bowl. You know, they like, hey, we, you know, here's the Pro Bowl team. Just they're going to play Madden instead. Maybe they'll play the brand new AUDL video game, which we're going to talk about in a minute. I doubt it'll be out by then, but nice idea in the end.
Yeah, that would be a great unveiling if they could. I don't know if
it'll be
realistic to pull it off in 6 months or so, 7 months, whatever it'll be before the All-Star game. But if that was their like their first release, I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, even if it's like maybe a demo version, you know what I mean? Like have like a demo, you know, thing for the players to test out. You can get some immediate feedback from the players, and they can complain about their ratings or how, you know, I don't jump high enough or whatever. I don't know. You can, you know, all the different things that all the players in every other sport currently complain about when it comes to these video games about not being fast enough, or I can't believe my awareness rating is like a 67 or whatever. I don't know. You know, all the things that come with that. So, yeah, definitely some fun stuff. So we're going to move into a bit of a lightning round here so we can get to the Antoine Davis interview before too long. You know, we'll call it buzzer beater. First time we're doing this for sure. Definitely a couple things we wanted to touch on, kind of catching everybody up on all the things that happened during the offseason. So first one, a big one, maybe not quite a buzzer beater, but a little bit definitely we can talk about here. Cam Brock, all-time leader in pretty much every meaningful category for the AUDL, announced that he is going to be retiring, will not be coming back to the AUDL. Alex, we talked about this a little bit before. He is one of the best players in AUDL history, but still just kind of feels like almost like a relative unknown in the larger Ultimate community. Am I wrong with that?
No, I mean, when I think of him, I've been following the league since the beginning. He's clearly one of the faces of the league for me. Been there since day one, really, you know, I don't think I've ever heard a bad word said about him. And he posted a pretty heartfelt video. I think it was on the Alley Cats Facebook about his choices to retire and to spend more time with the youth in the Indianapolis community. And I'm pretty sure he's a teacher also for his day job. So that all kind of goes together. But definitely will be missed on and off the field.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he was a huge impact player for Indy. Definitely a big part of them being as successful as they were in recent years. And certainly taking the next step and making championship weekend this past year, great leadership, unquestionably there. And like you said, we'll be missed for sure. But maybe one day we'll see him come back around and be a coach of the Alley Cats or something like that. I don't know. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, 10 years from now, what the AUDL looks like when we've got a bunch of former players and stuff like that. It'll be, you know, it happens all the time in other sports now, but we'll get to that one day. I think it'll be fun. We can say it's like, oh, he was the all-time leader in goals when he retired.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few coaches who used to be players in the league, but none of them are like legend. You know, right. It's not like Larry Bird coming back to coach the Pacers or anything like
right.
that.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, you don't have any of that type of stuff yet. I just think we haven't reached the point where, I mean, honestly, most of these players' careers just haven't been long enough in the AUDL for it to really feel like it was all that impactful. Now that, you know, Cam Brock turns in after seven full seasons, I mean, that's pretty hefty career, definitely time to put up some of the most mind-boggling stats that we've seen so far in AUDL history. And you know, I think, you know, eventually, yes, all those records are probably gonna be passed as guys play longer, and you know, you've got, if people are starting out at the age of 18 and play until they're 30, you know, you've got a pretty long window to go past the 7 years that Cam Brock played there. But overall, definitely gonna be missed, and would be really weird to see Indy taking the field this upcoming year without him. I wonder how they'll kind of fill that void. They've got some talented players for sure, but he's been a pretty natural leader for them. So this next one, we talked about a little bit.
For.
True. I guess, I don't know. This next one here, one that we already touched on a little bit, AUDL working on production of a new video game. Pretty cool stuff. They've announced some updates to it, and the graphics look pretty legit from the couple of images we've seen so far. I'm just going to be honest. I would totally buy this game. I 100% would go out and get this. I am somebody who has loved playing these sport franchise games over the years. I played them a lot when I was a kid growing up, and I would totally jump all over the opportunity to play an AUDL game. I don't know what it would look like, you know, if there's going to be, you know, a franchise mode, or is it just kind of more of a single season play out, much like, you know, or even just like a single game mode. That's what Madden and 2K and all these other games used to be when they first started, was just a, hey, you can now take your favorite team and play as them, and you could play a one-off game, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, so Tim DeBile has been pretty active on Twitter, and I think on r/ultimate on Reddit also explaining some of these questions. I believe there is going to be like a create a player mode, like, or like a career mode, something like that.
Okay.
So that would be pretty cool if they could put that together. And yeah, I think it also answered a bit of the questions of where we might see women in this game. You know, I think a pretty fair criticism of the AUDL being the one to produce this game is, you know, that it's ostensibly a men's league, and, you know,
yeah,
the goal of this game is to get Ultimate, you know, more into the wider world outside of just the Ultimate playing community. I think a video game would be a great tool to do that. You know, we spoke on this show last season about who would be on the cover athlete and, you know, how they would be able to market that.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be great, but definitely, you know, want to make sure there's space to fully represent everyone who plays Ultimate if this is going to be the one product that's going to get Ultimate out there.
Right. And that's the tough thing too, is that it's obviously going to be an AUDL themed video game, but where, you know, there is the opportunity. I know 2K waited a very long time to make it happen. The WNBA teams are now available in that setting and stuff like that. I think it's interesting because I believe it's still called NBA 2K.
Yeah.
You know, there's not really any real reference to the WNBA and the title of it. So, you know, I don't think that the title alone should dissuade the AUDL from adding, you know, maybe the POL rosters to it. And I think that, I don't know that the relationship there is not great. I understand that, but hey, I don't really know what else you do.
Cooperate, I'll be thrilled.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I don't foresee that really being the case, but I have to say, I would be interested. I don't really know what else they could do. Maybe, you know, maybe you go out and you just do like the top, I don't know, 10 women's teams from the club division. I don't know, the top 8 teams or something like that.
I don't know what the, like, who has the rights to those players' right. likenesses is, right? It's like, how many of them might not want to be in an AUDL produced game?
Sure. There's probably a lot, you know, there's probably a good number that wouldn't have interest in that. You know, it's tough because I think that, yeah, there is the issue here. And this was a, you know, a big staple of the gender equity movement, is the fact that more often than not, what happens is, you know, this idea that, oh, well, we'll promote the men's version of X first, and then when it becomes popular, we'll create the women's one. Well, oftentimes that either doesn't happen, the resources that are necessary are not dedicated to it, or it's just too late and the popularity window is gone. So it kind of feels like if there's going to be a time to do it, you want to do it when it first happens. But obviously the fractured relationship between a lot of the women in the Ultimate community and the AUDL makes that rather difficult. And I don't know what the solution is there for sure. I am not the person to figure that out, but
yeah, there might be a solution. Some
logistical issues.
There might be a solution with the PUL or the women's pro teams who are connected to AUDL teams, you know, like the Flyers and the Radiance,
sure.
for example, I'm not sure if exactly the same ownership group, but certainly a lot of crossover there. I know that's not the case. You know, there's some PUL teams and markets that don't have AUDL teams.
Mm-hmm.
There's some who are in the same markets and very clearly don't want to work together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe this is at least a little footpath, if not a full bridge, to cooperation there. And I think, this certainly is not top of the list as far as any of their public records show for the PUEL. Is that a little wrong? You know, this is definitely not top of mind for a lot of the PUEL leadership as far as, you know, everything they've put out in the world. But I think if they, you know, if there's a chance for them to get in on this, I think it would show a lot to the greater Ultimate community.
Yeah, and I think it would be a great thing. You know, I don't know, you don't want to leave women out of this game. I mean, again, because it promotes a version of the sport where it's men only, and that's been such an issue in the past. And so, I don't know, I would love to make it, I would love to see it happen. I really hope it does happen. We're doing terrible at this whole buzzer beater thing so far. We're having very lengthy discussions.
Should we put a timer on this?
I know. One day I'll learn how to edit and you can have like the horn go off. So, all right, we're going to be a little bit quicker with these next couple. Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, member of the New York Empire, has made some waves recently on social media, you know, YouTube and even ESPN. Obviously, it's not a shock to see MKBHD clips on there, but he has recently appeared in a video with former President Barack Obama, asking him a couple questions that he kind of had after reading the first part of his memoir, his presidential memoir. So it was really interesting. Not really an ultimate related thing, but kind of again just
Obama said he had good hops.
That's true. There was a clip played during the video that Obama reacted to. So Barack Obama has now definitively seen at least one AUDL play. No question about it. And on top of that, that clip, I believe it was actually the very same clip, if I'm not mistaken, ended up being on ESPN's pregame segment for Wildcard Weekend featuring former NFL wide receiver Randy Moss. People have seen this, very popular on social media. You got mossed. People basically just getting roofed over and over again. So an old clip for Marques actually playing with the Philadelphia Phoenix was the one that made it into the You Got Moss clip. Randy Moss saying Marques's name on ESPN. Pretty cool stuff. With him, he obviously has such persona and brand outside of the sport, but the AUDL has not been shy about leaning into using him as a marketing tool. And the fact that he is such a popular figure outside of Ultimate, I think this is, again, just underlines just clearly the impact that he can have for the sport beyond the Ultimate community. He really branches out and kind of bridges that gap.
And there's our buzzer. Next topic. Chicago Wildfire rebrand themselves as the Chicago Union. They released their logos and a pretty cool hype video, I think, also with it. They had a whole bracket over the past few months trying to
Chicago Chads.
And
how did that not win?
They wrote in Chicago Chaos, just for our listeners who might not be aware. and the font that they used made it look like Chicago Chads with the O turning into a D. A lot of noise on Twitter, including from some Union players, that still feels weird to say, about, hoping the Chads would win. And I think there's a pretty robust market out there for Chicago Chads gear. If there's any graphic designers out there who want to maybe collaborate and start to make some of this,
More than happy to work with you on this. Would love to maybe make this a thing that could potentially benefit some, youth programs or something like that at Ultimate, have it be a, something fun for good type of deal. But how has nobody jumped on this yet? How is there not Chicago Chad's gear? I feel like, even just as a joke, we would get some sales out of this.
At least a shirt or a hat, something like that.
Yeah, I 100% would grab a t-shirt. I think it would be hilarious. And I have friends that I think would jump on this as well. There's definitely a market for it. So if you are a graphic designer, please feel free to reach out to us. Do it on Twitter DMs because we don't have an email yet. I realized that when we were, prepping this, but whatever. All right,
cool.
Buzzer on that. We're going to make that make sense one day. Next in our agenda here, San Jose names Jackson Stearns the GM. Interesting because he's also playing. So that's a pretty interesting dual role there. We've seen some player coaches, not too many player GMs. And Daniel Silverstein is new head coach there. He's currently the coach of the California men's college team. So a little bit of a shakeup for the leadership out in San Jose. I think Dan Silverstein has been involved with them previously, but this is kind of like a formal promotion to head coach for them. So excited to see what San Jose looks like next year.
And just quickly, it'll be interesting to see if Stearns as a GM and then that player GM role makes any changes for the league as a whole. A lot of general managers trying to sign players to contracts and a bit of recruitment maybe in there. So having a player in that role, it could be a positive change. We'll see if other teams look to emulate that.
So does he get to negotiate his own contract? Is that how this works? Does he just negotiate against himself? I'm picturing a table and he just runs from either side, just runs around the table and like counter offers himself until he gets to the number he wants to hit.
I imagine ownership might be involved in those negotiations, but there's certainly no salary cap in the AUDL. So anything goes.
Yeah, definitely a possibility. All right, buzzer on that one. Next one here, AUDL been running a fundraiser for the last few months here, featuring Bill Nye the Science Guy, who's been very active. So they've now raised, I believe the last update was $320,000, pretty sizable amount of money to bring in. About 50,000 of that is from Bill Nye himself. So really cool to see Nye heavily involved. I know he's been at Championship Weekend in the past and involved with the 50th anniversary celebration for USA Ultimate and such, but really cool to see him really investing in the sport at a pretty significant level as well. I know that he's a celebrity and, you know, $50,000 to him is probably not a crazy amount of money, but $50,000 is like the operating budget of a freaking franchise at this point, the AUDL. You could buy a team for that much easy.
Is that, do they sell Craigslist ads still? Is that how it works?
I don't know. Probably.
In all seriousness,
we might be growing past that.
Certainly a sizable investment. I think having Bill Nye on board definitely brings, similar to Marques Brownlee, brings a much bigger reach than the league had before.
Again, somebody who is associated with Ultimate, who is very famous for something completely unrelated to Ultimate.
Yeah. Should be noted, the league got a fair amount of criticism for putting out what's essentially a fundraiser that they designed as an equity campaign. Some people also particularly upset about the word equity, but the fact that they raised, you know, over $300,000 in just a few months now shows that, is, you know, the league serious. The league valued itself at $17 million. Also, should be thrown in there.
Right, that's pretty wild.
Potentially, is that the most like valuable Ultimate related entity in the world right now? I don't have any numbers.
I mean, I don't know.
Compare that to.
Yeah, I don't know that anything even comes close. I don't think. I mean, let's be honest, UltiWorld's not getting bought for $17 million. Charlie, would, if somebody offers Charlie $17 million, he cashes out right now and goes to retire somewhere. 100%. There's no question about that. I think USA Ultimate, unfortunately, when you look at the financials, not great right now with membership declining and no real on-field product at the moment. Plus, they don't have the same level of sponsorship as the AUDL. So I don't think USA Ultimate, I mean, also governing bodies are not really the same thing as like a sports league, you know what I mean? And I don't know, it's interesting. So yeah, I think far and away the AUDL has to be the most valuable when you, from like a monetary perspective, association or organization at Ultimate. I don't think any of these apparel companies even come close either. So yeah, I mean, $17 million, that's an absurd amount of money in the Ultimate world.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, that's their self-valuation. So I'm not sure how
sure
accurate that is compared to other entities that have been, you know, around for a little bit longer, but certainly raises some eyebrows.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that number, I mean, I don't know how realistic it is, but the fact that somebody came to that number and they all agreed to that is something, that's for sure. All right. One last thing here we're going to get to before we dive into this Antoine interview. Again, speaking of the league and kind of its development and growth, AUDL bought out Fulcrum this summer and they hired Tim DeBile and three other full-time marketing members. So a little bit of growth for the league office and some signs that maybe the league is looking to expand its marketing, you know, efforts. And I mean, probably a pretty good indicator that things might be going okay if they're hiring four full-time employees. Said that totally backwards. So, you know, overall, I think a pretty positive sign for the AUDL as a whole.
Definitely. You know, this team's been getting right to work. I think as far as like Ultimate clips that I've seen from between USA Ultimate and all the semi-pro leagues on social media, the AUDL clearly the highest volume and the highest like engagement. So
yeah,
you know, they're doing good work right away, and that's what you want to hear.
I know, definitely. Yeah, if you're looking to see the league expand, they seem to be on the right path. So all right, that's gonna do it for this buzzer beater section. So let's get into this interview right now with Antoine. That'll be coming up in just a second, so stick around. Seven, everyone. I am joined now, along with Alex, by Antoine Davis, one of the newest members of the Atlanta Hustle, 2019 AUDL All-Star, longtime fixture of Bay Area Ultimate as well. Antoine, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's obviously been a while since many of us have had a chance to play any Ultimate. Definitely been an interesting year for sure in a lot of ways, but you're moving to a new team within the AUDL. Not something we see happen a ton right now. Obviously, a lot of players kind of just play with their local team, and and stick with it. So talk to me a little bit about your move to Atlanta, kind of what sparked that, and you know, what you're most looking forward to about playing with the Hustle this year.
Yeah, it was kind of all random, really.
Okay.
During this whole pandemic, I actually got stuck in the Philippines at the time. And
what happened there?
Yeah, I was actually planning on to take a year off from playing Ultimate Frisbee. So this in 2020, I wasn't planning on playing. And I turned down a lot of playing opportunities to do so. And I was going to coach the U20 Philippines national team. Because I was traveling the world and hosting clinics, and they liked what I was doing and offered me the position. And so then the lockdown happened across the world. Now I got stuck there for 3.5 months.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. And luckily I was in a great house with a great family. It was actually the president of Ultimate there. I was in his house.
Oh, wow, okay. And
got to spend time with his family, and it was great, honestly. And around mid-June, I was able to catch a flight to the United States. It took, like, I think 72 traveling hours in total.
My goodness.
Because, you know, it was like go to Korea, then like a 12-hour layover, then like go to San Francisco, 15-hour layover, then go to D.C., then I was home. But I kicked it in D.C. for a month, decided I was like, all right, I got to get my stuff from San Francisco. I had my stuff at a friend's house and his garage all packed in my car. I arrived to San Francisco, and my friend actually had a spare room for a month that like was paid for a whole month. And I was like, all right, I'll just stay here, kind of figure out my bearings. Then figured that I should probably go back home after that month. Road tripped across America to go back home, and decided to stop in Atlanta to see my sister because she just bought a house. And which is like, it's in Kennesaw, Georgia, which is like 30 minutes outside of Atlanta.
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just having a really good time getting to know, kind of reconnecting with my sister and her husband, my niece, and kind of like the just Georgia culture. And like within a week of me staying there, she offered like, you could take the spare bedroom until like the pandemic is over. And I was like, oh, I'll take that offer. So I ended up staying in Atlanta instead of going back to DC.
Well, it sounds like the Atlanta Hustle are going to benefit from one of the most bizarre origin stories of joining a team that I think I've ever heard. Wow. So you were in the Philippines for 3.5 months. You're supposed to be coaching the U20 team. This is just insane. Well, I'm happy to hear that it all worked out. You're able to get back. 72 travel hours is absolutely insane. I cannot imagine doing that personally. I think I probably would have lost my mind at some point. So this really seems to just kind of be all falling in together. So I guess now, have you had a chance to even really interact much with the Ultimate community in Atlanta? I know obviously you had a chance to, you know, spend time with family is fantastic, and it's a great thing. But have you really even gotten a chance to figure out who it is you're now signing up to play with this upcoming year?
Yeah, we've been doing like obviously socially distanced, mask required stuff, like just like simple working out together at a big field. Just some of the team. So I would probably say a third of the team. Okay. Already, but I'm also really close with chain lining. I'm really close with John Stubbs, and
sure.
So him and I have been hanging out quite a bit, and I got the chance to meet John Bosey and Miranda, and so just pretty much most of the core guys that I think I'm going to play with on offense as well. So yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So you're starting to lay the groundwork there. What exactly does preparation look like at this point? I know you know, as of right now, we're expecting there to be a 2021 season, kind of thinking that it will hopefully all go as according to plan. It might look a little bit different than what we would normally expect, but you know, how's preparation going? I know you talked about doing some of the workouts. Are you guys doing, you know, Zoom calls to go over strategy, or is it like still like kind of early on for that even to be taking place? What exactly does the preparation process look like right now?
Yeah, at this point in time, usually like in the, I guess, normal world, preparation is still pretty individual. Like, I guess in San Francisco, I would be playing like leagues during this time, probably like a beach league and a weekly 7-on-7 league. But it's usually most of like just, you know, hitting the weights, getting to the field, getting to like riding the bike as much as I can. So it's really individual, and it's like I also love the process of training as well. So it really hasn't changed too much for me in terms of training.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I'm curious. You know, joining a new team obviously isn't easy, and you know, you've gotten to connect with players on the field. You know, how do you anticipate joining like a new like team culture, a new even like offensive plays? You know, have you been able to and connect with the coaching staff and like figure out, you know, you mentioned you'll likely be playing offense, and you know, I'm curious what your preparation for that looks like now that we're getting closer to playing.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of old film about how kind of Atlanta runs their offense, and I'm excited also as well to get like Miranda as a coach. I've heard so many great things about her, and been really missing that last kind of year or two. I felt like I kind of missed out on some great coaching from just past teams. So, and now to have her, you know, supporting my growth as just an individual athlete, I'm just over the moon for. And in terms of other ways to prepare, I've been talking to the other players how they run the system, and it seems pretty similar to what I've grown up to. But also, they tend to kind of rely on individual players a bit more, and like kind of let stars shine when need to, which I'm excited for. I feel like in past systems that was kind of frowned upon.
Glad you just called yourself a star there. You're one of the few players who was selected for the 2019 All-Star Game. I know that was a while ago at this point, but certainly one of the unique experiences, you know, in the ultimate world right now. Can you share a little bit about what that was like for you?
Yeah, the All-Star Game was probably easily top three ultimate games I've ever experienced. It was just the atmosphere was so energetic. Like obviously the skill was at a high level. And what was most interesting to me was I kind of came into the experience thinking, like, I remember landing, I was like, oh, I'm probably gonna have to deal with a bunch of egos here and like people thinking they like deserve the disc more or stuff. But it was like none of that at all. And everyone was just like there to have a good time and get to know each other, you know, have a fun game, competitive game, but kind of let everyone ball out. And, you know, some people definitely got to shine during that game. And it was an experience I hope to get back to and hopefully this season.
Oh yeah, I think everybody would enjoy that. I think, well, I mean, the return to normalcy aspect of it for sure. But I mean, like you said, the top three game in your ultimate career is pretty high praise given your playing career. And I mean, it was probably one of the best games the AUDL has ever seen. You know, I guess take me through a little bit of like the how that was able to come together. I mean, usually it takes a while for players to gain chemistry together and stuff like that. And while yes, there probably was instances where people were not on the same page, it seemed like it was a pretty fluid level of play. It didn't seem like it was really choppy or I just didn't know where everybody else was going to cut to or who to, you know, focus in on defense or anything like that. How exactly did that all come together so quickly?
Yeah, I think it was just people just automatically gave each other a high level of trust, and we just stuck to like simple schemes and didn't try to do too much because we know we obviously don't have too much chemistry between each other. But we kind of, the great thing about the All-Star game is like everyone's pretty athletic. So you can just like kind of throw a lot of trust balls and make and depend on your person going to make the right decision when throwing something that maybe is like 50-50. But it's like, I think like there was a throw that Goose threw to me. I didn't think I was open at all. And he was like, oh, you're open. And he just fires it. And luckily I was able to outpace Bo a bit, but I didn't think I was open at all during some of those plays. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting to hear, the high level of trust. I guess, yeah, I know that from playing with and against these guys in the club division, or even, you know, playing a championship weekend in the AUDL, I'm sure you formulated some relationships, but interesting to see all that talent kind of come together on the field and be so successful at the same time. I think it's pretty interesting too to hear you say that you didn't think you were open, and Goose just like, yeah, man, you got it. Go get it.
I feel like sometimes in like an All-Star game setting, like there's a feeling of like, oh, you're not like always open, but you're one of those players that like people trust. So like I was coaching my high school team at Beach of Dreams this year, and Gabe Hernandez went and played a pickup game with a bunch of high school kids, which was really just them throwing jump balls to him. So like, Gabe Hernandez is running deep, I'm going to throw it to him. I feel like,
right.
Yeah, some of those players in the field might have had the same thing for you. And they're like, oh, Antoine's running deep. All right, he's open.
Yeah,
they watched enough Revolver games to understand it.
Right. He later told me, he was like, yeah, I always think you're open. I was like, okay.
Goodness. All right. So I, one of the things, I guess you already mentioned Goose. Was there somebody on that field that you were like really excited to, you know, share the field with or to get a chance to match up with or anything like that, that maybe you hadn't before or had it in a long time or anything like that?
Anyone particular? I mean, Goose and I definitely we work together, so we always kind of imagine the day we got to play with each other instead of get against each other. So that was definitely one I was excited for. I would also say playing against Babbitt. I've never played against Babbitt, and
okay.
I just seen the like high athleticism from him and how just been at all, like how he can move all that weight so majestically throughout the air. And I was like, he's like easily what 20 pounds more than me, but just equally as fast is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably one of the best athletes in the sport, really. Right. You know, I know the AUDL has in the past kind of jokingly suggested that he could be playing linebacker or something like that. And, you know, in the, you know, something, he's got that type of build. So it's not, and it is surprising when you see him, he's not this big lumbering guy. Like he moves pretty fluidly. So I think it's interesting. Right. You single him out. And of course, yes, Goose is, I think there's a lot of players that enjoy playing with Goose and the style of play that he brings to the field, especially if you're a downfield receiver, given what his skill set has been over the years. Transitioning away from looking back on 2019, which feels like about 10 years ago now, and looking ahead to 2021, I'm curious to know what it is that you're thinking for this upcoming season. Obviously, COVID has not gone away. There is some hope on the horizon in the form of the vaccines that are, you know, it sounds like being distributed, you know, slowly but surely. I've obviously seen, I don't even know how many conflicting reports as to when this is going to all blow over, but you know, how are you approaching the upcoming season, kind of knowing that the pandemic's obviously not over yet, but it seems to be trending in the right direction?
Yeah. I'm always an optimist for things. So I've been planning for a long time for a season to happen, and I still have high hopes that it's going to happen, or we can like make something happen at least. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be ready for it. Also, I have this like I'm pushing towards this hope, but also have this genuine fear of like what happened in the NFL and the NBA at the beginning of their seasons, where there was just like double to triple amount of injuries because people weren't prepared. So knowing that is like even at a higher risk, I think I've actually would be trained. I've been training harder than I would knowing that a season is going to happen.
Interesting. Okay. I probably would not have expected that answer. I think it's interesting. You point to the NFL and the NBA, especially the NFL. I think it was like week two or week three, whatever it was, or, you know, sometime in mid September, where it felt like, star players across the league were just going down. And you have to wonder, obviously, because there was no off season or not a typical one for those athletes, that, you know, maybe that was the leading cause of it. No preseason for them as well. So I guess kind of in that same mindset, what level of play should we expect? Maybe not physically, because it sounds like you're really taking the physical preparation ready to go, but you're not going to have really much time to practice, of any time to really even hold practice before you get a chance to step out on that field and potentially play your first AUDL game in a new city. So what should we expect, maybe like cohesive wise, in terms of the level of play that we see when Ultimate finally returns?
I definitely think it's going to look ugly.
Sure.
And it is going to, since everyone has dealt with this pandemic so differently, they're basically like the table's wide open for each and every team and each and every player, to be honest. Star players shouldn't expect to be star players in the past, and bench players shouldn't expect to be bench players anymore. I think I've, as a person who's been pretty involved with the Ultimate community during these last, during the pandemic, because quite a few people follow me on my Instagram and kind of reach out like how to continue their own training. And it seems a lot of the young guns have been kind of still been putting in the hours, and the older population has been kind of dialing things back. And so I think there's going to be like a pretty like big switch in power coming into the new season.
Interesting. So you're predicting a youth movement, it sounds like, coming up for the AUDL and maybe Ultimate as a whole. I think that'll be interesting to see. I mean, yeah, what Ultimate's going to look like from a level of play standpoint when everybody finally gets back on the field is going to be really interesting. I'm mm-hmm. Intrigued by that, and also I'm excited for it, obviously, as well. I think it'll be a great thing to see. Now, talking about returning to the field, obviously, the AUDL back in kind of the summer months of 2020 stepped up when it came to trying to address the issues of racial inclusion and lack of diversity in the sport of Ultimate. They held a couple different panels that were very well received and really insightful. Some really interesting stuff that being discussed there. What exactly do you think is going to happen when we see players return to the field and get a chance to maybe express themselves and stand up for these social justice initiatives on the field? Because we haven't seen Ultimate back on the field. We haven't had any sort of on-field product since, we've witnessed Breonna Taylor and George Floyd and Jacob Blake and countless others, unfortunately, where we've seen, police brutality, complete lack of transparency into police work, and among other things. Obviously, there's been protests all over the country, but we've seen other sports handle this stuff already. How exactly do you think, the Ultimate and more specifically the AUDL is really going to handle this directly?
I don't know, really. I know
it's a loaded question. I'll give you that. I put a lot of pressure on you there to have the solution.
I've definitely have gotten more interest in just from the individuals about my overall story of how I experienced Ultimate and how I felt during my whole, from, you know, beginning to now story. And I do see initiatives like there's the Atlanta Hustle is, they're trying to put together a HBCU team, and which I've never heard of prior to all this. And there's also, I believe the Raleigh Flyers is also trying to start something over there because there's a ton of HBCUs in Carolina, in the Carolinas. And so I know in terms of that, because I want to be involved with the HBCU team here. And so I know there's small impactful movements happening there. And, but as the AUDL or USAU, I really haven't heard too much on their end, I guess. But also I'm not like I'm not plugged into Twitter as much as most people are. I read the news very much. I kind of keep like my daily dose of the outside world minimal because it's been pretty crazy. So
it's probably a smart move at this point.
Have you, I know the AUDL put out the AUDL Inclusion Initiative that your teammate Matt Smith is heading up. Has the Hustle interacted with that at all? I know they're putting on workshops for different teams, starting at least inter-team conversations. Is that something that's, you know, affected since you've joined the Hustle?
There hasn't, I honestly haven't been pretty involved on that end. I haven't really been involved on that.
I mean, I think it's hard right now. I think, you know, you said you only met about a third of your teammates, from the team. And I think it's, right. It's hard because I think I was actually having a conversation with somebody about this the other day. There's been a lot of thought power put into all of this, but I don't think we've seen a whole lot of the action because of the pandemic. A lot of that action step has been delayed. But I know that, you know, we're starting to see some things crop up. Shanique Crawford is working on the content tour, the All Black Ultimate Tour across the country, visiting the Bay Area, Seattle, and Philadelphia. Like Alex just mentioned, the AUDL Inclusion Initiative, they've been doing that actually since, I want to say, was it last January? So we're coming up on about a year now that they've really been running that. So there are some things that are, I feel like, in the works right now. This is the first time I'm hearing about this HBCU teams, though. That actually sounds really interesting. I'm excited to see. Do you have a little bit more info on what that looks like?
Yeah, I know, at least for the Atlanta side, we're just trying to, there's a good 5 or 6 players that currently play at Morehouse. So we're trying to use them as like the foundation and invite other HBCUs to join that single team. And basically, hopefully, the long-term idea is that have each of these teams have their own ultimate program and also find sponsors with the to help, you know, lower the pay barrier that's usually associated with Ultimate. So that's pretty much like the only thing that has gone so far, but I'm excited to hear more about it.
I was going to say, add for the listeners that the Cheese family that just purchased a minority stake in the Hustle has a son who attends Morehouse and is helping to start the team there. So I think that was at least part of the initiative, which I know started before he began attending there. It's you know, not just the players involved, but also all the way to the ownership level.
Right. Which is neat. I think, you know, we're starting to see slowly the sport of Ultimate start to change. And it's, you know, probably a bit overdue, the level of change that is needed in the sport. You know, I think, it's finally starting to reckon a little bit with its whiteness. We got a long ways to go. The fact that Alex and I are the two doing this right now, we don't have some more diverse voices out there, is definitely an issue, but I'm happy to get your perspective on all of this. And I think it, you know, means a lot to me, and it means a lot to our listeners, I think, to hear a little bit more. So do you want to give a quick plug? I know you said you got your Instagram, you've been doing a lot of stuff there. Sounds like you've got more than a couple of interesting stories to share from, you know, your time in the Philippines to traveling across the country and stuff like that. If you want to give a quick plug for listeners to go check that out.
Yeah, I'm actually just only on Instagram. So it's Antoine Davis Coach. And I do sports performance coaching. Most of my clients are ultimate athletes. Also just got certified as a life coach. And
nice.
Kind of, yeah. And trying to begin on that endeavor with really helping with people finding a balance between their athletic life and their work life, other life kind of things. And I know a lot of people struggle with finding the balance and feeling content between the two. Between the two or three or four things that they tend to juggle with ultimate. So looking at more of being like a holistic coach in general.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty interesting and exciting stuff. I'm happy to hear that. It sounds like is off to a good start, and hopefully we'll continue to grow. So Antoine, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. Hopefully we will get a chance to see you on the field before too long. I know a lot of us in the Ultimate community are desperately awaiting the return to play for Ultimate, and excited to see you suit up with your new teammates and see you take on the brand new Atlantic Division, which is going to look a lot different than what we've seen it be in the past too. So thank you again, and looking forward to seeing you back on the field.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun being here, and I hope there's a season as well.
You and me both. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say we really would like to have some Ultimate back. Alright, welcome back to Stall 7. We just wrapped up talking to Antoine Davis. Big thanks again to him for coming on the show. Some really great stuff. I cannot believe he's stuck in the Philippines for 3.5 months. Just ridiculous to me to think about. I have been stuck in my house for pretty much 9 months now, but being stuck in a foreign country, having gone there to coach a U20 ultimate team is a pretty unique story.
Yeah, definitely. And, I think I was following his social media, and he didn't stop training. He was like posting videos of him working out every day.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to be in great shape come the start of the 2021 season. There's going to be a few players. I mean, he talked about it a little bit there. It's going to be interesting to see. I wonder, maybe we will start to see the separation, maybe this, I guess, arrival of the next generation of stars in the AUDL because of this whole setup. You know, you've got a lot of these young guys right now. If you don't have kids and you don't have, like, you know, if you're working remotely and stuff like that, like, you might have a bit more free time to put in a little bit of extra effort into your training. So, excited to see what it looks like. And, I'm interested to see if Antoine's prediction comes true. There's definitely room for that. So that's pretty much going to wrap it up for this episode. One thing we wanted to say before we hopped off here, though, is we do have a subscriber only segment for all of you UltiWorld subscribers. Alex and I decided to discuss a little bit of what the future of Ultimate could look like. Does the AUDL need the Ultimate community? Is there a potential for Ultimate or the AUDL to start maybe like developing players kind of on its own? We broke down some of the players that are missing across the board from the men's mixed and club, the all America teams, like the all club teams. Also when we Ulti World every year, we do our top players in each division. So we decided to look at how many players from each of those lists that received votes and stuff like that were actually in the AUDL. So breaking some of the demographics there, interesting trends for sure. And maybe a little bit surprising. So definitely worth checking out. Really fun conversation for Alex and I. And we kind of went off on some tangents in there for sure, but I think it was pretty interesting stuff and definitely a lot of speculation. So if you're interested in basically just shooting the shit on what Ultimate might look like 10 years from now, then definitely the conversation for you.
For sure. And if it's, you hear something you like, hear something you want to disagree with, at Stall7 on Twitter. Always love engaging with the fans.
Absolutely. And, yeah. Feel free to reach out. And reminder to all of you graphic designers out there, Chicago Chad's gear, there is a market for this. So reach out, hit up our DMs. They are open. Feel free to reach out, whatever. But seriously, if you have questions or things you want us to discuss on future shows, feel free to reach out as well. Always love having engagement with our listeners. So, Alex, that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You guys will hear from us again before Tuesday.